podcast.
Ron Jacobs. To go back to that bar example.
You like bars, don't you?
Bonnie Vorden. We're presenting a credential to the bouncer who examines it.
Which is the big burly dude that stands by the door, right?
Okay. Who examines it.
Ah, yes. The bar. Again, we're at the bar. Well, of course, that's very appropriate being that I'm here in Las Vegas where there are loads of bars. Okay, and gambling and every other vice you can imagine. But we're not here to talk about vices. No, we are here to talk about plumbing. Plumbing, you say? Yeah, plumbing. Because, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, Windows Communication Foundation, it's just plumbing. Come on, what's the big deal? Hey, plumbing is pretty cool. I don't know about you, but I like a house with plumbing. And in fact, if the plumbing doesn't work, you've got a very big problem. Yeah, try stopping up your plumbing and see what you have to do, right? You're calling the plumber in a hurry. Well, we're about to get a major upgrade in the plumbing of web services with Windows Communication Foundation. And this half, we're going to get to reliable and transacted. So let's join the webcast already in progress.
If I think back to one of the big differences when web services first came out, I used to be, before I did Indigo, I used to be on the ComPlus team. And in the world of kind of ComPlus and distributed components, one of the fundamental assumptions we made was that, you know, you're operating on a reliable network. And, you know, you pretty much could guarantee that when you made a call to another machine, it wasn't going to get lost. There wasn't going to be any kind of problem. It just happens. But then when people went to web services, the web technologies, and plus the fact that sometimes you're dealing with less reliable networks and congestion and all that, they began to run into problems in the area of reliability. And there's a lot of challenges around this. Let's talk a little bit about what are some of those.
Sure. So now we're switching gears entirely and moving over to reliability. I basically think about reliability as a guard against things that will go wrong. You know, in a perfect world, we wouldn't need all of this stuff. But as we know, the world is not perfect. And so a lot of things go wrong with trying to build reliable distributed systems. You can see this poor guy has a headache because it's so hard.
It just makes me hurt just looking at him.
There are some communication issues. You know, the network might go down, uh-huh. Or a connection between a client and a service might drop. If there's a lot of congestion, the network might lose messages if routers are dropping packets. Messages might take different paths to get to the service, so they might arrive out of order. And once they're in the service, we're still not guaranteed that that everything is going to go well. For instance, if the service throws an exception, if the service fails, we don't know what happens to that message. Maybe it's lost. A service could process messages that were meant to be processed together separately. And if a service fails, the entire distributed system might be inconsistent because something didn't happen. But if a client tries to resend a message to make sure that it happens, there might be side effects. The service might receive the message twice and do the action twice.
Yeah, so that gets really nasty because people have written a lot of very complicated code to try to overcome those problems. Or more commonly, people have just done very, very simple services because they're worried about trying to do anything complex.
Exactly, and that's really what WCF brings to the table. Now it's possible to do a lot of complicated things that really to do before you'd have to write hundreds of thousands of lines of code just to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. So you have this concept of sessions as being one of the ways in which you deal with this.
Yeah, and really, what we're doing here is offering a reliable session. So let's see if this build ends up working. Animation. What you would have seen is that we would get a reliable session. If a message happens to be lost, we would resend it. And a reliable session gives you certain guarantees. So it guarantees that the message you send will be delivered exactly once in the order that it was sent. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can configure that to be in the order that it was received, if you like. This is resilient to a number of things, like transport disconnections. So say I'm ordering a book from Amazon, and I'm on my laptop, and then I walk into an elevator and my connection drops. When I walk out of that elevator, my reliable session will automatically reconnect me to the same service instance that I had been talking to before. So it means I don't need to restart the entire conversation. I don't need to start over and find the book and then put in my credit card information. I can just start from wherever I left off.
Now, there are some limitations to this, right? I mean, it's not like if your laptop suddenly died, you know, then it's not going to send that message again, right?
You know, things are reliable only until the end of the world, as one of our PMs
well,
likes
but,
to
but
say.
I mean, you know, it's not like it used a database and wrote it in a database, and then when your laptop starts up, it suddenly loads up that thing and sends it again.
Well, it depends. We're uh-huh. actually going to talk about, for instance, some queuing features that do similar things. There are all sorts of reliability measures you can use, and some might take care of the problem you're talking about.
All right. Okay, good.
Reliable sessions are also resilient to intermediary failures. So you might say, how is this different from TCP? TCP usually only works over one hop, so you're guaranteed something will reach, but only over one router bounce. What reliable sessions give you is end-to-end, app-to-app reliability. Mm-hmm. So even if a router goes down somewhere in the middle, you're guaranteed that message will be retried.
Which is very cool, considering that, you know, a lot of people are going to be going over public networks where those things are out of your control.
Absolutely. You also get some features for free with this. One of them is connection verification and maintenance. So if a service is talking to a client and the client disappears, after a while, the reliable session will say, you know what, that client is never coming back. Service, you should go release yourself back into memory. There's no reason for you to be taking up a connection. You also get some flow control. So if the client and service realize that there are messages being dropped in between, they'll understand that the network is getting congested. And so they'll slow down the rate at which they're sending so they don't add to the network congestion. So they wait for that congestion to disappear a little bit.
Now, when you talk about the client and service being able to do this kind of stuff, is that saying, well, if it's WCF on both ends, then you get this wonderful benefit? Or are we saying that it could be that it's just some brand X soap stack out there that does support the reliable messaging protocol?
You know, WCF is all about interoperability. It's designed to be the most interoperable distributed systems framework. And to that end, we implement a lot of standards. So in this case, we implement the WS reliable messaging standard, which is implemented by a number of other vendors. We work with a lot of different vendors like IBM and BEA and WebMethods and a lot of the big players in web services to get a set of standards so that we can do this sort of advanced functionality. So we can do advanced security, we can do advanced reliable messaging across platforms.
How cool is that? All right. Yo, gotta love that. Okay. So we got a little demonstration of this, huh?
Sure. Let's see how this one works out. Let me just share out my desktop.
And by the way, people who are listening, if you want to press F5 on your keyboard, you'll see a nice full screen view of this.
All right. I am running on a really slow machine today, so let's hope nothing too bad happens. This is a pretty uninteresting image transfer. Let's just give it a go and see what happens here.
Did you remember to wind that?
Sorry?
The rubber band, right? Okay, yeah. All right, no, never mind.
All right, and here we go. We'll just take a look at what happens here. I am lazy, and so we only have default Windows pictures, which luckily are very pretty. All I'm going to do is hit send on this end, and this is going to send that image over to the receiver on the right.
Okay.
As soon as my machine gets around to it, I promise. All right.
I see it going. Of course, it's not so pretty when you see it on this end because it's not the full color. It's like 16 colors, so it's kind of icky.
Oh, that's too bad. So we see that we're just sending this message, nothing too interesting happening. The thing that makes this interesting is this bit in the middle, the SOAP network simulator. And what the simulator does is simulate message loss. As you've been saying, messages are dropped on the internet. Packets are dropped on the internet all the time. Something, in fact, like 3-5% of the messages sent over the internet disappear. So we're just going to pull up network loss to simulate what might happen over the internet and resend that same image.
You know, that's kind of funny that it's a simulator, because I would have thought it was a simulator.
Well, you know, we like to put our own spin on things.
I see that we have a nice hole in our picture there.
Yeah. You know, the picture is a little less pretty when you drop parts of it.
Yeah.
So one of the things we can do here is use that reliable session we were just talking about.
Okay.
So let's shut this down and just add a reliable session attribute here. And that just says, use a reliable session. So that's on the sending side. We need to make that same change on the receiving side so both ends know that we're expecting this. So we'll just save those two things, and we will restart the application. We don't need to do a rebuild, because these are configuration files that are read at runtime. And so all of our code stays exactly the same. We're abstracting away from the communication things here.
That is very cool.
So let's just try that again. What else do I have here? Since the sunset wasn't that pretty, let's try water lilies. How's that? Is that better?
A little better. All right.
All right. So let's just try sending this just regular, without simulating any packet loss, just to make sure we know what's going on.
Okay.
And so the same thing is coming up.
Now, I noticed that, so we put this reliable session in the config for an endpoint. So it's saying, you know, this service is always going to be using a reliable session, right, for all of its activity, right?
Well, actually, what you can have as many endpoints as you like on a particular service. So here we're talking in particular about this endpoint.
Right.
This endpoint uses something called this custom binding.
Right.
In particular, the configuration my custom binding.
Sure.
So if we wanted, we could have a separate endpoint that did not use reliable messaging. If we were interested in performance or something like that, we wouldn't need to change any of the code. We would just add a new endpoint that didn't include this reliable session attribute.
Got it.
All right, so what happened here? Yep, the whole thing came over. That's what we expect. Now what happens if we pull up message loss? The last time we lost about, I think, five parts of it. Let's see what happens this time, now that we're using reliable sessions. Looking good so far.
Yeah. I'm holding my breath here. I can't imagine.
It's like the last 5 minutes of a basketball game, isn't it?
Is it going to work? Oh, my gosh.
And here we see it worked.
It's amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, what can you say? It works.
All right.
But wait, there's more. Okay.
let's go back to the rest of the talk.
Okay. All right. So that was pretty fabulous. And really, we're making jokes about it, but that's seriously cool stuff, because you know, you try that kind of problem with, you know, before WCF and without reliable messaging, that's a lot of work to write code that could survive that.
Yeah, you know, we did a kind of experiment when we were first thinking about this stuff. And if you took an application that you needed to run in, say, an enterprise environment that needed security, that needed reliable messaging, that needed transaction support, you would need to write hundreds of thousands of lines of code yourself to do that. But if you use something like WCF, where we actually have standard implementations for all of those, you can just invoke our implementations, and you end up writing a lot less code.
You know what? Okay, so already people are going, can we get that sample code? Because that looks really cool.
You know, I have to tell you, it is not very robust sample code. And if it gets rewritten to be much better, then yes, we will find a way to put it out there. Right now, it's just bad practice.
Well, yeah, so it's a cheesy demo. What can you say? But eventually, as Indigo, I'm doing the I word again.
Wait for legal to come after you.
As WCF gets closer to being a shipping product, there'll be a lot of sample apps.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and so. I'm working on, I recommend that y'all check out windowscommunication.net, which is a site that I've been working on for a little bit. And that's really where we're hosting a lot of information that will come online. And we've got a lot of samples from the team and from the community up there that show off things like this. So highly recommend you check that out.
All right. So, in fact, I was thinking about this the other day because, you know, like ASP.net has their site and Windows Workflow has their site. Yeah. And I thought, I wonder if they have WindowsCommunicationFramework.net, but that would be like too long, wouldn't it?
It's just Windows Communication.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's good. Okay. But now, we do have a question where they're asking, well, how do we achieve this reliability? I'm like, what's going on under the covers to make that work?
You know, the way I think about it, this is a little bit simplistic, but the way I would explain it is basically just retrying. You know, you're just doing the obvious thing where you're retrying any message that you don't get an ACK for. So I think about it the same way I think about TCP, only it's the services. It's the end-to-end final endpoints that are doing that ACKing.
Okay, great. And
then there are lots of clever optimizations to make this a reasonable thing to do.
All right. So now let's get to the big question, which is transactions. You know, and being that I was a Complus guy, you know, and Complus did transactions, when .NET first came out and web services, people go, oh, web services is cool. Can we do transactions? And we said, no, can't do transactions. No transactions. Okay. but you know, there's always this problem of having consistent data in distributed systems. How do you do it?
Well, so I'm going to talk about two things. One of them that often go by the name transactions. I just want to make sure we're being clear about the difference. One of them is atomic transactions, and one of them is compensating activities, sometimes called compensating transactions. So I think about atomic transactions as something you just declare that these things will happen together or not at all, and then it happens.
That's so, like we did in Complus, right? And we use DTC to make it happen.
So if I, exactly. Mm-hmm. If I am giving $20 to you, I will say debit $20 from my bank account, and you will say put $20 into my bank account, and those two things will happen together or not at all.
And of course, a banker would kill you if you used an atomic transaction to do that.
No, but probably an atomic transaction is one of the best ways to do it, because they'll either happen or not at all.
Except for that the rules of double entry bookkeeping or whatever they call that. You know,
absolutely.
I say that because I used to use that example too in those days. And then one day I went to meet some bankers, and they were like, "We don't do it that way." Okay, and I said, "Okay, fine." You know, it's a bad example, but sure. You know, you get the idea. Okay.
So that's an atomic transaction where things happen together or not at all. A compensating activity is a little bit different. It's a lot more laissez-faire.
Okay. You know,
when we think about a compensating activity, we kind of assume everything will happen correctly, and then mm-hmm. we'll check to see if it doesn't. So in a compensating activity. Bankers would hate this even more. I'll say debit 20 from my account. You'd say add 20 to my account. And then when we got our bank bills at the end of the month, we would just check them out. And if something didn't work, we'd have to go find out what happened and fix the error.
Yeah.
Compensate.
Okay.
Now, these are different things, and there are kind of trade-offs here. Atomic transactions are often simpler to develop, because as a developer, you just say do these things together, and then
right.
the messaging level or the messaging infrastructure takes care of it. It sometimes gives you a perf hit, because now your whole transaction is as fast or more likely as slow as the slowest part. And you're getting some tighter coupling there. You're saying these things that are being executed under the same transaction are all related. And that might affect your ability to update something or how you can maintain those activities separately.
Yeah, you know, and there is one other very large difference between these. And this is the thing the bankers really hate, is that atomic transactions, when they fail, they take all of the work that was sort of pending and just throw it away. And so it's like it never happened. And that's what they don't like, really. And so in compensation, there's a record of the things that were supposed to happen but didn't work right, and the record of undoing that.
Sure.
So that's what they were after.
So in compensating activities, sometimes they're a little more complicated to develop, because you have to check for all of these error conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But you're likely to get better performance unless an error happens, because you're not holding yourself to any bottleneck. And you've got looser coupling, so you can independently update or manage different bits of that bit. I think it's important to point out one more thing, which is that atomic transactions and compensating activities happen at different levels. Atomic transaction is kind of taken care of by the messaging level. You just say, do these things, and the messaging layer takes care of it. In a compensating activity, you actually need something at the application level, an application logic, sometimes even a person to come in and say, what went wrong here and how do we compensate for it? So that's not something the messaging level can take care of.
Exactly. And yeah, that's a good point, because the atomic transaction infrastructure is something that you wouldn't want to do, say, with a business partner across the internet using the classic, you know, DTC stuff. Anyway, there are ways to get this done with WCF.
I just want to step through once again, quickly step through the code constructs that we can use to take care of this. On the service side, you just say that... a transaction flow is required or not allowed. And then you go on. Oh, no. I did something terrible.
You went to the other slide deck. Okay, hang on. We're back.
We're back.
We did it. Okay.
Tech support saves the day. Thank you, Ron. and then what you can do, make sure I'm clicking on the right one. As the service programmer, I know there's a lot of green here. Let's start by looking at the green right above the first method, the transfer one method. And that just says... transaction scope is required, so the message is expecting a transaction scope passed in, and it'll auto-complete the transaction when the method is done. So if we successfully get through this message and get to that closing brace, report back to the client that this bit of the transaction is done. If we take a look at that second method, transfer 2, we see we've set transaction auto-complete equals false. And that just means somewhere in that method, we've got to manually say set transaction complete to report back to the client. And we do similar things on the service, so if you look at those attributes above the service, they look pretty similar. Now, the client's got it easy. All the client needs to do is create a new transaction and a transaction scope and call any methods in that context. So that automatically flows that transaction scope over to the methods on the service side. Then it just says scope.complete to show that it's done with its bit. And on that closing brace, the scope is disposed, which means all the voting and commitment happens there.
And of course, the only reason you would want to do this is, like in the example here, you have something that needs to update transactionally on the local, on the client side. So it has like update local cache here, for example.
Sure.
Right. Okay.
And the last bit to remember is that, you know, as a developer, you don't always know how your app's going to be deployed. So we give the service administrator the ability to say whether or not transactions are allowed.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of horror stories about devs coming in one day to their job and someone saying, you know, our databases are so much faster since I've turned off transactions. And then every developer weeps because what that means is their database is corrupted.
Yeah.
Here, if there's a mismatch between what the code wants and what happens with this transaction flow, we'll throw an exception. We won't let you go on without knowing that, for some reason a transaction is required somewhere.
Yeah, that was a big problem in Complus, yeah, that we had. Yeah, definitely. Okay, but then there's a queues, obviously, the next big thing that we want to think about. How do queues get involved in this?
You know, transactions are often involved with are often used in conjunction with queues. And let me just see. There we go. There's the build. So what usually happens is that a caller will open a transaction to the queue. I think about queues somewhat simplistically. It's just big buffers. You know, they hold messages until you're ready to do something with them. So the caller will send a message down to the queue.
Look at it go. There it goes.
And then the queue will use queue-to-queue communication to talk to the service queue. Then when the service is ready to process, it's going to suck up those messages from the service queue. So that's the pretty simple thing to think about.
And so obviously you'd want to do these. Queues give you a great way to kind of deal with problems in network infrastructure.
Absolutely. So queues increase availability. So if the network goes down between the client and the service, the caller and the service don't actually need to know, because the caller can keep sending messages to the queue and the service can keep sucking up messages from its queue.
Or it could be that, you know, maybe the service just, you know, the machine had to be rebooted or something, or sure, it's down for some reason, right? Then same reason.
Queues also support scale out. So you can set multiple services to read from the same queue, which gives you some load balancing. You also get load leveling. So if you're in the sort of business where you see spikes of traffic a lot, you don't need to handle that spike. Instead, you can just let the queues buffer it and handle an average load. And queues are often a building block for compensating activities.
Okay, so I don't get that. How are they a building block for compensating?
Well, so let's see what happens if something fails. Let's say that the service queue sends a message to the service, and every time it does that, the service accepts.
Okay.
So eventually the queue is going to realize, if I send this message up to the service one more time, that service is going to accept. So instead, it sends the message over to a poison queue on its side.
Okay, hang on a second, because when you said the service accepts, I thought, accepts
the
message.
It throws an exception.
Okay, gotcha.
That's bad slang.
All right, gotcha, okay.
So the service queue eventually sends that message over to the poison queue on its side.
Okay.
Now, what happens if the caller queue can't get that message over to the service queue? The most common reason for this to happen is if the caller puts a time to live on the message. It says, if the service does not process this message within 30 minutes, then the message is no longer valid.
Okay.
And I want it back. So then what it does is the caller queue sends that message over to a dead letter queue on its side. And so those are the compensating bits. Usually, very often, a person is still in charge of looking through the dead letter queue and the poison queue to see why these messages are causing things to fail or see why they're not being processed on time. We've got some code constructs in here that'll be available in the slides, but you know, let's just skip to the demo to give you an idea of just how these work.
Okay, let's do that.
So this is another pretty easy demo that I think is easiest understood just by running it, so let's give that a shot.
Okay, you didn't share your screen yet.
Oh, you know, I always make that mistake. Uh-huh. Once I even warned you in advance, so I'm glad.
There we go. That. I'm seeing it now.
Okay, so all we've got here is a simple WinForm.
Okay.
From which we're going to launch a direct client, a queue client, and just a service that'll accept things from it. The your kind of accept, not the my kind of accept.
Oh, okay. All right, got it.
All right, so here we're just going to talk from direct. Let's open that connection and then send that message over. And our service gets it, and we're going to talk from queue. Open that and send that message over. All right, so pretty simple. What happens if the service disappears? If it goes down, if it's rebooted? So let's try from direct again.
Oh, this can't be good.
And in fact, we've got a failure. Because the endpoint isn't found right now, the direct client doesn't know how to deal with it, so it just throws an exception.
Gotcha.
What about from the queue? Well, it went somewhere. Wonder where?
It went into the ether.
It went into the queue, and so when the service starts up again, it reads from the queue.
There it is.
Pretty easy. And in fact, the only thing that's different about those two is that one of them uses NetMSMQ. NetMSMQ is a transport, and the NetMSMQ binding. Whereas the other one just uses an HTTP binding. They're using different transports, so this one is using queuing infrastructure. That's the only difference. Everything else is exactly the same.
You know what I love about this is, MSMQ has been around for a long time, but it was a totally different programming model. And if you wanted to do a few things, you had to learn a whole different way of doing it. And what's beautiful about this is it's the same programming model, just change the config that uses a different transport.
Exactly. It's all about the separation between config and code to make things easier to maintain, easier to upgrade, easier to abstract away from the semantics of communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'll tell you what, we've got some questions, but before we do...
Can I just do one summary?
Oh, okay, go ahead, summarize.
I'll be right quick.
Okay.
Here's my major takeaways.
All right.
We let you do a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the hard decisions are yours to make. You've got to decide what the right security policy is.
You can't decide these
things
for me?
You've got to decide what the right reliability policy is. And once you do, we are here to enforce whatever you want. We've got the code constructs. We've got the tools for you to use. But you've got to decide how to architect it. So the power is yours.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, the power is mine. All right. Well, here's a question. The question is, how do you handle duplication? I guess like duplicate messages maybe coming across. So if I have reliable messaging, is it going to take out duplicates for me?
Sure. With a reliable session, you've got the guarantee that every message will be delivered exactly once. So the service will only get it once.
Ah, okay. So that's going to eliminate a big headache. And he says, also, would this work with Java Web Services? So you were saying that if provided that the SOAP stack they're using implements reliable messaging,
exactly,
they're good to go. And my phone's ringing. Hey, how fun is that?
Way too popular for your own good.
I'm busy. Go away. Okay.
So that depends on what specifications that web stack is going to implement as well. So as long as they implement the same specs, the WS Star protocols have an interop workshop before every spec is published.
Yeah.
So that means that by the time a spec is ratified, every vendor that's signed onto it has a working implementation.
Okay, that's when they go to Vegas and they all get in a big room and they
exactly,
yeah, they make
exactly.
it work.
They're called Plug Fest. We actually host them on campus all the time. So I think the next one is next week.
Oh, okay. All right. So and then they said their experience with queues, and they weren't using a Microsoft implementation, is that they only guarantee delivery but not on-time delivery. But that's sort of in the nature of queues. I mean, a queue is going to hold it until it can deliver it, right? I mean,
and that's really why a lot of things end up in the dead letter queue on the caller side, because sometimes because of that, a caller will often mark a time to live on the message,
right.
And so a message will expire before it's processed by the service.
Yeah, and there's going to be cases where that makes sense to do for the depending on the problem you're trying to solve.
If it's stock prices, you better watch out.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, see, people are again asking for the demos, and sorry, but they're not available yet. But there will be some. Where did you say that was? Windowscommunications.net.
Windowscommunication.net. Yes.
Okay. Windowscommunication.net. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Good. And that's where you're going to find more information. And here somebody says, where can I find more information on Windows Communication Foundation and which blogs discuss? Ooh, there's a pitch for your blog right there. Right?
You know, so much of the team blogs, and they love community and they love feedback and they just love to get the word out. We've got some of our most prolific bloggers on linked to from the windowscommunication.net page. So there's a whole blog role on the right nav panel.
All right. Yeah. And by the way, I should put in a little pitch for the Artcast show, because actually tomorrow I'm going to visit with Shai Cohen, who's another member of the Windows Communication Foundation team. We're working on a whole bunch of very cool stuff for some events coming up, and he's going to be on my show. We're going to have a bunch of Artcast shows about Windows Communication Foundation. Clemens Vasters is also going to be on it.
These are all fantastic.
Yeah,
guys.
In fact, we're going to go do some live broadcasts from TechEd Israel
in
May. So we're going to be there by the pool, broadcasting.
Working hard as usual.
So yeah, you'll definitely be able to hear those recordings as well. Okay, so here's another one. He says, what about the DTC in distributed web services? I mean, is there an equivalent of this middleman DTC?
You know, we still plug into the MSDTC. We still use those standards too.
Okay, all right, so there you go. Well, and here's somebody who says, you guys are the best presenters. Thank you so much, because that's why we're here. We are so glad that you all took...
You know, if you feel that way, please fill out the evaluation. If you don't feel that way, please ignore my previous sentence.
That's right. Okay, well, thanks a lot. I'd like to thank Ami, finally get the name right, for being here with me on Artcast today. Thanks to our engineer, Mark, and our producer, Jeff. We'll see you next time on Artcast.
Ami Vora, ladies and gentlemen. secure, reliable, transacted messaging with Windows Communication Foundation. This is really exciting stuff, you know, because we've been waiting a long, long time for this to get here. And it is at hand. It's at the door. You know, you can download this stuff and start working with it today. There's even a Go Live license, so why not? I mean, if I were building something web service related right now, I would definitely be on this. You want to go to windowscommunication.net and download it. And let me know what you think. Send a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com. Hey, we'll see you next time on ArcCast.